We're going to talk in a little bit more detail about Jeff's father, John Jack Hobbs, and how he came to work for the company, what he did for the company, and the kind of things that he would do both, I suppose, for the company on a professional side and for the more sports and social side as well, which he was heavily involved with. So, Jeff, over to you. When did your father join the company?
I think it was 1924. My father, I think, had a natural aptitude for engineering. When he left school in 1919, he was actually one of the first intake for the new Gloucester Junior Technical College, which ran in Brunswick Road. Somewhere I have a school report of his, which I will dig out, which shows that he was pretty good at learning all the technical aspects which were necessary to start a career in engineering. So he became an apprentice at Fieldings. I think he was in 24, worked his way through completed his apprenticeship just about at the time of the Great Slump. And I recall my mother saying that he was put out of work for, I think it was 3 weeks, which was a relatively short period of time with all the short time working that was going on around industry generally at that period. Then he was called back in and never lost another day from until he retired. He spent his first years working on fielding gas and oil engines, and I know he went far and wide across the country. I can remember him telling me about driving down into the wilds of West Wales in the sort of 20s and early 30s and all sorts of other similar things, and also going to the Blakeney Hotel in Norfolk, which is still there, where a fielding engine was installed to run their lighting, how he was there for I think over a week, and they put him up in one of the best rooms in the hotel, and he was very, very well looked after. But of course, all commissions weren't as good as that. Anyway, he spent a lot of time on engines. And then realised that sometime in about the mid-30s that the hydraulic work, which Fieldings were renowned for, was the future. Engines were beginning to go out in terms of production, and really there was only the maintenance aspect that was left to be done. And so he switched to the hydraulic side, he worked on all sorts of hydraulic press work, really for the rest of his life. But he initially was as a fitter, both in the works and he used to go away. In fact, in my younger days, around the period leading up to and just into the war, my mother used to go with Dad, we would stay in the digs somewhere in Glasgow or Leeds or Newcastle-on-Tyne, I recall, Aberdare in South Wales, where he was working installing various presses, a lot of it for the Ministry of Supply, as they were called, Royal Ordnance Factories. I remember ROF Gateshead was one place we went, I can recall seeing now, he was involved in doing all this sort of work. Incidentally, nothing to do in a sense with Dad's work, but we stayed. I can still recall staying in a miner's two up and two down sort of cottage in Aberdare, and being taken out one evening a little way up the road and down on an old trackway, and there in front of us was the very last timber framed viaduct built by Brunel. I can still got the picture in my mind now. It was demolished some few years afterwards. No one was allowed to go on to it, but I can still visualise that structure. That's another story. In 1943, the year my brother was born, actually, my father, I suspect, may have had a word with somebody, but anyway, he was brought in to be a charge hand in the fitting shop, working under a man called Frank Capener, who was the fitting shop foreman. And about 18 months or so later, Dad became foreman when Frank Capener retired, and he did that job for two or three more years. And then he was given a commission known as the firm's acceptance engineer. I think initially he was doing it more or less on his own, and latterly it grew into a reasonably sized department with three or four members of staff. And in essence, what it meant was that when a press was completed in Gloucester, first of all, my father's role was to ensure that the equipment was working properly and was fit for purpose. The press was then demolished, taken away to the customer's factory, where it was re-erected by one of the roving groups of fitters. And then Dad's job was to go and be satisfied that the press was now working in all its full working order in its new situation, and to get, in effect, the customer's signature on a piece of paper to say that he was satisfied, and that then Fieldings could obviously get paid for the work that they'd done. And this role of acceptance engineer, in one form or another, it was largely what he did for much of the rest of his career. He actually ended up with a title of Executive Engineering Manager, and I think he was very much involved in the practical, if I can describe it, the practical side of production work. No disrespect to anyone in drawing offices or design engineers, but I think somehow my father had that sixth sense of how to actually get something to actually operate on the ground and work, and he seemed to be almost like a consultant to other groups in the organisation to try and smooth rough corners, if I can describe it in those terms. Anyway, he did this sort of role, and the work took him not only to virtually anywhere around England and Scotland, but he went to many, many parts of the world. He spent some time in South Africa, America, New Zealand. He went to Israel. He spent some time in Bochum, in Birmingham, in Germany, and many another place. And in fact, Issoire in France, in a magazine that we have a copy of, there is an article of which runs to several pages, actually, on a trip to New Zealand by John T. Hobbs, and it was fairly typical of the sort of things that that he would have done.
When he went to Issoire in France, was that to work on the Sedjadour press for for the Concorde? Did he ever talk about his work on that press?
Yes, is the short answer, and I think he I remember him telling us quite a lot of stories at the time. I have to confess that for the moment I don't recall much of the detail. It just so happens that I have in front of me two talks that he gave to a local club after he retired about his life in engineering, and I have to confess I've not read them recently, but I will go through them, and perhaps we could talk about aspects like that again on some future occasion.
Indeed, yeah, of course. And travelling around, did he have a company car? Was that paid for? Was the petrol paid for, or the car paid for?
Dad had his own car for the most part. There was a period shortly in the when he was first an acceptance engineer, when the firm, in their wisdom, bought a the forerunner of a Ford Transit van with some supplementary seating in the back. And I think the idea was that it would be used as a vehicle to take a group of men to a particular site and so on. And it had it was emblazoned with Fielding and Platt on the side. Father hated driving this car anywhere, and certainly having it parked at home was something that he really did not like at all. And it wasn't so long. I suppose we probably had it for 2 or 3 years. I can remember going in it to various places, because I used to get taken school holidays and so on. I would perhaps go with him to Birmingham or London or Cardiff, were the three big local, in inverted commas, places that he spent an awful lot of time. And I would go with him on school holiday trips, and he would go off to do whatever he had to get done, and I would go and enjoy myself looking at trains or buses or something like that. But anyway, he normally had his own car, and then was paid a sort of mileage allowance, reimbursed mileage allowance for what he'd incurred.
And why did he hate this van so much?
I think two reasons. One was that it was a very high driving position, and very there was little or no comfort in it at all. And of course, one has to remember that in those days there was no such things as seat belts. And I can remember sort of sliding off the seat. I was probably only about 12 to 14, but nevertheless, you sort of slid off the seats if you put the brakes on and things like that. So I think it was pretty uncomfortable to drive, quite honestly. And the other thing I've got to say is that my father did suffer very badly with a slipped disc and in his back. He always put it down to the fact that as a youngster, either an apprenticeship or just afterwards, he had to carry a barrel of oil down some steps from the stores into the engine part of the factory, and slipped, and he went down and hurt his back, and he did suffer quite badly actually over the years, for the rest of his life. So in that sense, I think the van didn't do anything to to please him a lot, but yes, it did have its moments. Incidentally, I mean, a story about having in one's own car. I can't remember who it was travelling with him, but he. We used to have a Singer Super 12 in 1949, Singer Super 12, and this must have been therefore just about early 50s. He was travelling on the Portway in Bristol, from Bristol down to Avonmouth, when a lorry just came out from the side turning and just drove straight out, hit this vehicle amidships. And what was interesting was it was a four-door car, and all the doors were hung off the central pillar on each side, both doors on each side. I'm not explaining this very well. And Dad always said that somehow his hand went out, he was driving, and touched the door handle on the offside, and it flew open, and he fell out into the road. And whoever it was who was in the passenger seat alongside flipped over into the driving seat virtually, or leant over, and they both got out alive. The car was a complete write-off. It was impacted almost up to the centre line. I recall that Dad got up and remonstrated with the driver. Incidentally, my father never ever swore all the time I could ever recall him, but he must have said some choice phrases nevertheless, pithy comments. And this chap said, "Oh, you can wait here forever," and just drove out. So just a sort of illustration of some of the things that went wrong even when you drove your own car around.
It wasn't necessarily the danger at the job on site, it was getting there in the first place. But from some of the other documents that you've brought in, I remember there was a letter from Atkeys in Nottingham to your father complimenting him on his fitting work. He was obviously very accomplished at the job that he did. Did he ever talk about the work that he did at various places off-site?
He was very modest, I think, really. I mean, he would sometimes... I think he really enjoyed his work. I mean, it was incredibly practical at home. All sorts of appliances and devices that would go wrong, and Dad would go out to the shed and make things that would fit it back together again. I mean, we had an old twin tub washing machine for years and years and years, and I think Mother used to say, "Couldn't we have a new one, Jack?" And he'd go out to the shed and find something that would actually hold it together for a bit longer. And he was really quite good in that sense. I do recall him over one or two of the big worrying problems that they had. The Eastwar job was one. And I think one of the things that he went out to, when he went out to New Zealand, I think was another difficult job. I mean, difficult to the point where it was, I think, worrying him as to how he could actually get the work done that was required to satisfy the customer, and at the same time try and keep the company solvent, so to speak. I think there were sometimes some really quite significant problems that he had to contend with. But all in all, I think he actually enjoyed it all.
Fantastic. Thank you, Jeff.